The proliferation of illegal guns in our communities is alarming. We are all battling the same challenges. Illegal guns coming from the United States.
The last set of data we had was that 90% of the crime guns in Ontario, in particular, where I place, were from the United States.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
So,
welcome to Y'allitics.
Yes, welcome. And I was just about to say that. Actually, so, I was just about to dive in.
So we're back at one of our favorite places. This is the Manhattan Project Beer Company.
With one of our favorite people.
With our favorite person. My favorite person.
Yeah.
former desk colleague, desk mate, Rebecca Lopez from WFAA. We're just west of the Dallas skyline at Manhattan Project here.
Yep.
You've never been here before, right,
no,
Rebecca?
No, this is awesome. No,
It's a fun
place.
I don't
get to drink beer during the day like you guys
you
do.
Should work that into your contract. Yeah, it took us a minute to get that into our contract. We finally got it in there.
And you're still not drinking beer.
I'm being bougie.
Yeah, what do you have in there, Rebecca?
Rosé.
Rosé.
I'm going to my old standby here, Necessary Evil. It's the Pilsner.
Okay.
I think it's fantastic.
Last time I did one of the stouts, I think, and it was something else.
You had to lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, I did. I lightened up this time and got a Peacemaker.
Peacekeeper.
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 Interesting choice.
Which, you know, fits me, right?
Yeah,
because you're the one keeping the peace, Wheeler.
Speaking of keeping peace, by the way, so you heard the open there. You heard some sound, and there's an issue at the border, at the southern border, to
there
be
is?
Exact. Yes. Canada's southern border. You hear so much about our southern border.
Mm-hmm.
Canada's got some issues with its southern border, too. And, of course, its neighbor to the south would be us.
Yeah. Yes. And those are the voices you just heard there. Law enforcement from Canada concerned about what's coming across their southern border.
Which
and
is
a lot of guns.
Yeah. Which, you know, we have this issue as well, Rebecca. You know, we've talked a lot about this with our southern border sending guns across that one, too.
To Mexico, yeah.
And there was some news made on that in the past week.
Right. So just recently, the president of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, had a meeting with President Trump about the tariffs. And in that meeting,
They called off
the tariffs for now, but part of what a lot of people didn't hear was what he conceded to, and that was
right, because he said, you know, they're going to agree to beef up their border, keep people from crossing, keep the fentanyl and the drugs from coming across, but what we didn't hear is what came from her.
Was that he agreed to help with the smuggling of drugs that's going across from the U.S., guns and, did I say drugs? Guns to Mexico, because if you know any, there's also a lawsuit right now that the Mexican government
Huge
has filed
lawsuit.
Against gun makers in the United States, and part of that lawsuit, it's very detailed about how they believe that the United States and these gun makers are arming the cartels, and they cannot fight. That you know, the Mexican army is having a very difficult time fighting cartels because they are outarmed.
Yeah, they're outgunned.
Yeah, they're outgunned.
Some, you know, because some of the videos you see on Instagram
and with AR-15s,
like
they're high-powered weapons.
It's shocking. So, you may have seen in the headlines some of the issues over the years about the guns flowing from the United States down to Mexico. The reason we had Rebecca on today is because you just did this fascinating story about guns going north into Canada, a place that's not used to violent crime like, say, Mexico or the United States. And what the police there were telling you and what ATF here is telling you was fascinating. That's why we wanted to have you on. Walk us through kind of how this came about, how the story developed.
So I went through the ATF Citizens Academy.
You learned to be an agent.
So I learned to be an agent, yeah. And they brought in all these people to talk to us, and they brought in some of the agents that deal with smuggling of weapons into other countries. And they talked about the shocking statistics that the majority of violent crime in some of the major cities in Canada, they have been able to trace back to guns that were manufactured in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because Canada, after a mass shooting there several years back, outlawed many of the high-powered weapons, including AR-15s.
Like 1,500 different.
1,500 different ones. Yeah.
Okay.
So now you can buy a gun or a rifle in the United States for say $400 or $500. you go to Canada, they're going to pay you anywhere from $5,000 to $50,000. It's incredible.
For that same gun. So there's a market there.
Weapon. So you're making a ton of money if you're going to smuggle drugs into Canada. I mean, guns. I keep saying drugs. Guns into
Canada.
She's
a police reporter, if you can't tell. She covers a lot of drugs and guns. But we're talking about guns here.
Yeah, so there's a huge concern in Canada. We interviewed the Ontario police chief. And he says that they've been able to find that like 80 to 90% of gun violence in Canada are American-made weapons. They can trace them.
80 to 90% there in Ontario, he's telling you that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's stunning. And the thing is, okay, so now you have this market. It's a ready-made market. If you're saying you can buy one for a couple $100 here and go sell it up there for several $1,000s, mm-hmm. now you're appealing to some people here in the United States who go, wait a minute, there's a business. Mm. But then on top of that, in Canada, not only have they banned a lot of these guns that are readily available here, and magazines and et cetera. But in Canada, to own a gun, you've got to go through background mm-hmm. checks, you've got to take a firearm safety course, and you've got to wait a minimum of 4 weeks. There again, that creates even more of a market for somebody to just drive up some guns from down south. If you need it right away, bam, you pay them and you're in.
Yeah, and we highlighted a case of a guy out of Dallas, Hackworth, and he purchased weapons and he pled guilty to purchasing weapons here in Texas. And a lot of the weapons are coming from Texas into
really?
Canada. Yes, because, you
why
know,
Texas,
we, well, you know, we don't have as strict a gun laws as some of the other states where it's harder to buy weapons. And in Texas, you know, it's pretty easy to get a weapon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they're seeing a lot of weapons from Texas ending up in Canada. And this one guy, they were able to trace several crimes that happened in the United States and in Canada back to weapons that he smuggled into Canada.
Wow.
And so you're seeing a lot of that and a lot of concern from citizens in Canada. There's a doctors group that is very much against what is happening, and they're trying to fight and trying to get the U.S. government and the Canadian government to crack down more at the border so that these guns don't come across, because they see what happens to kids and to people that are shot with AR-15s mm. and with, you know, these high-powered weapons. And
you told us a moment ago what Mexico decided to do and the concessions that Mexico got from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What is Canada doing, though? Has Canada gotten any of the same concessions from President Trump?
So Canada was already in the process of beefing up its border security. They had already said that they were going to invest, I think, over $1 billion or more than that. I can't remember the price, but they were investing in better technology, more agents at the border. They were already doing all of that prior to this because of this issue of seeing the guns coming across onto their streets.
Yeah.
So some of what I think President Trump and Trudeau agreed to, or at least came out publicly, was already in place, honestly.
You know, it's a real conundrum for them, though, because this is just like what we deal with the drugs coming across the southern border. I mean, you can have a lot of agents down there, but you don't have enough agents to go through every single car to, you know, examine every single person. And they're going through this. The only difference is it's not drugs, it's guns. And there's no way to stop that completely, because they're so readily available here in the United States. And again, if you put that profit on top of it, you're luring people again, all the way from Texas, willing to make that drive up there.
Well, and they were telling me that it's a very porous border, too. There's many more ways to get into Canada that they aren't able to man.
It is the largest. Mm-hmm. Fill us in on this. Yeah. This border between the United States and Canada is the largest open border, essentially.
That's how one of the agents worded it. I mean, they do obviously have some, but it is very open compared to what you would see now even between Mexico and the United States. And so that is a great concern, because there's just
a huge border.
5,500
miles or so.
There's no way that you can really stop this. So I guess Canadian citizens also sued the U.S. government.
Right.
But it was interesting, because a Canadian court is actually ruled that they could not proceed with their lawsuit. It was actually a Canadian, if I remember correctly, it was one of their appellate courts that said they could not sue the U.S. gun manufacturers, whereas in Mexico, they got around it, mm-hmm. And were able to get a case into U.S. courts out of a case mainly out of Arizona. They targeted specific gun stores in Arizona where mm-hmm. they believed that they were able to actually trace weapons that were smuggled from those stores allegedly into Mexico. And so they were able to identify certain people and places, and that's how they were able to get their not being able to sue a foreign government, because they're actually also suing these stores.
Has Canada not done that yet, though?
No, Canada, I don't believe, has done that yet.
But they think some are from Texas, though, you were saying.
Yeah, oh, yes, a lot of the, yes, they are. So I guess people are going to see what happens with this Mexican case. And
I was
going
to say.
Because some of the other countries that are also have, because it's not just Canada and the U.S. A lot of our guns are making it into other countries across the world where there is gun violence. And so I think some of these other countries are kind of waiting and seeing what's going to happen. This case is going to be before the U.S. Supreme Court in March, mm-hmm. I believe March 3rd or 4th, and they're
going to hear
some of the arguments in this case, and what they're going to decide is, can they proceed with this lawsuit?
Yeah.
Can it move forward?
Yeah.
So we'll see what the, you know, obviously a very conservative court, we'll see what they decide to do.
Jason brought up a good point a minute ago here. I want to repeat it. This is from Superintendent Steve Watts. He's the head of the Integrated Guns and Gangs Task Force for Toronto Police. And he was telling you that this is the largest undefended border in the world. So there's a variety of smuggling techniques that are used. And when I think about this large undefended border, I'm thinking about Montana, North Dakota, mm-hmm. places like Wisconsin, even maybe in Michigan. It's a little more populated. But I've seen the photos where the only semblance of a border are these like mowed down trees that go. And it should be, I guarantee you they don't have the same type of motion detectors and the motion sensors in the ground like we do on our southern border.
So
how are they getting them across? Are they sneaking them through these rural areas, or are they just...
Yeah, I mean, in some cases, they're actually flying them right into the airport. So, and one of the biggest busts was one that they did at the airport in Toronto, where they had a bunch of weapons that were being just flown in into the into Canada. And also, one of the cases that we also highlighted, they were wrapping guns wrapped as Christmas gifts. And
they might have been.
Yeah, and then they were like, taking them on through into Canada. So yeah, they are finding all kinds of ways to smuggle them in. And so that's one of the things. That's why Canada is investing so much now on its infrastructure and on more agents, because they realize that a lot of the violence that is happening there is happening because of the weapons that are being smuggled from the U.S. into Canada.
When you talk to the folks up there, though, Rebecca, is there any reluctance? Is there any hesitation about, you know, coming out and being too critical of the United States? Obviously, Canada is trying to stay in good graces. You know, Mexico as well. I mean, the U.S. needs both of them as much as, you know, they need us, but... Is there some reluctance there in really pushing this hard?
Yeah, I think that's why you're not hearing a lot
is
about
really?
This issue. I feel like there is. But you know, you do, and you do also have very strong gun lobby in Canada as well. You do have people that are saying that they don't have the Second Amendment there, so it's a little different. When it comes to the rights of Canadians owning weapons. I mean, they are allowed to own weapons, but as you say, there's a lot of stricter guidelines and protocols, but they're not bound by a Second Amendment as the United States. But at the same time, they're concerned and that they're wanting more access legally to weapons in Canada, the gun lobby there. So they also have a very strong gun lobby and strong groups that are also fighting for more weapons. Mm. As well.
But Canadian citizens are dying, though. What's Canada scared of diplomatically, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's hard, depending on who's in office. I mean, you see what's happening right now. There's already this like kind of tense relationship between Canada and Mexico and the current administration. So I think that there is a hesitancy on
just
their
crossing
part.
The line.
Yeah, this adds one more layer to it, because we're already, you know, there's already a lot of controversy over immigration and over drugs and then tariffs and trade, and now you add this layer to it as well.
And I want to say something about Mexico, because while we have focused most of our coverage on Canada, because that is something new, and that's why you're seeing a huge increase in guns that are traced back from Canada, crimes to guns made in the U.S., In Mexico, it's the same thing with the cartels, and they use what they call straw purchasers. They'll get these like young kids, 18 and 19 years old, that can legally buy rifles and pay them $5,000 and have them buy the weapons for them and then hand them off to the cartels or to the illegal. And in some cases in Canada, that there was the Hells Angels and some other motorcycle groups that are the ones that are really were smuggling some of these weapons into Canada. But now in Mexico, there is only one gun store in Mexico.
There's only one gun store in
and
Mexico?
It's right outside of Mexico City, and it is inside a military base. You cannot even get, it's very difficult to buy a weapon in Mexico. One gun store.
And yeah, the Mexican culture is very, very anti-gun. I mean, you see those warnings as soon as you cross the border. Better heed those warnings, because if they find a gun on you, boy, you're in some deep.
And so you wonder then, okay, well then why is there so much gun violence? And so, well, because they are weapons that are being sent.
They're coming from here. In many cases, Texas, not just the
United States,
also Texas. Just to put a finer point on that, though, since we're talking about both ends of our border, Canada, yes, they're having a big issue there. This is overwhelming to them in a way. They had a bust, I think it was a couple of years ago. What was it? Several hundred weapons that were from the United States. Put that in perspective, though, when you start talking about Mexico, I mean, the ATFE, I guess it's called now, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Estimates 200,000 firearms a year trafficked from the U.S. into Mexico. This is the ATFE saying this. That is just, that boggles the mind.
It is.
And a lot of those are semi-automatic.
Oh, yeah. No, most of them are going to be AR-15s because that's what or AR-15-style weapon, semi-automatic weapons, because that is what the preference of the cartels are. And, the cartels train like paramilitary organizations.
Sure.
And a lot, if some of the hitmen for the cartels, the Zetas, were very, very big for a long time in the Gulf Cartel in Mexico. Well, those guys were former military in Mexico that were trained by the U.S. military. They were training, the Mexican military, and then those guys took off and became, broke off and became part of the Gulf Cartel, and they became what they called the pistoleros, or the hitmen for the Gulf Cartel, and they were very, very strong, and so you do see that happening as well. So these guys are, trained, and they train in camps, like you would see what we think of as Al-Qaeda and some of those people training. That's how the cartels train as well.
Well, this is the interesting thing to me, though, is a boomerang effect that happens here, because, you could have people in this country go, well, that's your problem. This is legal here. You need to figure out a way to catch that at the border or whatever. But the problem is it increases our problem here, too, because if you have these gangs and cartels that are being armed, whether it be in Mexico or Canada, and they are into, human smuggling, drug smuggling, et cetera, that stuff is making it across the border because those gangs and cartels are so powerful because they have weapons that came from here. So, as you export those weapons, you increase the likelihood that you're going to be importing those drugs and people who are being smuggled.
And you hear that a lot. I hear that a lot from people. It's like, well, why did Mexico just take down the cartels? But because they're armed to the teeth, and they are armed sometimes better than their military. And then you have the corruption. And I will say this, the past two presidents, including the current president, have very much been trying to take down the cartels. It was under the last presidency that they took down the Sinaloa cartel, and that was El Chapo and his family and everybody around El Chapo. Basically, the Sinaloa cartel has been dismantled, and it was the most violent gang cartel to ever come out of Mexico. And now you have this power fight between the cartels in Mexico, where they're fighting to see who's going to take over a lot of the territories that was the Sinaloa. And the Sinaloa cartel also trying to come back from El Chapo and those guys, getting arrested. And so you're having this war in Mexico also between the cartels. And it's very difficult for the government to take these people down and then thus stop drug trafficking, fentanyl, human trafficking from the United States.
When they're armed to the teeth.
Those are different level buyers, though, when you start talking about south of the border versus north of the border in Canada. You're wondering, who is this? Who needs a gun so badly that they're willing to pay, you know, $5,000 for a gun that you can get here for, you know, $300-$400.
Well, and in Canada, it is also gangs and illegal activity. The majority of the, a lot of the weapons that you're seeing are going into the hands of bad guys, of bad people. And, you know, and like here in America, too, I mean, many people own firearms. I mean, I own a firearm. There are people, you know, that own firearms that, you know, do it for protection. And so Canadians, there are many Canadians that have weapons for that reason. But, in this case, the kind of weapons that you're seeing, the fear is that you're going to have the same sort of groups that are gonna that are cartels that are popping up in Canada that you see in Mexico, and it's gonna be very, very difficult for them to fight these illegal the people that are have these weapons illegally and criminals against the Canadian police and Canadian military. Mm.
Jason's probation officer doesn't let him have a firearm, so he's, there's at least one person at the table who still doesn't have it. But you talked about straw purchasers a moment ago. For anyone who's ever purchased a firearm, you know that that's one of the things you have to check. I'm not buying this weapon for anybody else. You also talked to the ATFE for this story on WFAA. Tell us what the ATF said, ATFE said it is trying to do to stop this flow of guns from Texas to Canada.
Oh yeah, well they have a lot of operations going all at one time involving the illegal use of the illegal purchase of weapons here in Texas and the straw purchasers, and also one of the bigger problems too now are the what you call Glocks. Well, what can I think of the name of it? But they basically they turn a Glock into a automatic weapon, and so or different guns, and so they're Glock switch. That's what I was trying to think of. And so there's a huge investigations going on as well to keep those from going across the border, and you can get 10 years for just having one little Glock switch. But they are really focusing on the straw purchasers and these types of Glock switches and the weapons that they know, and they go often and surprise the gun stores, and they do the surprise inspections. I mean, almost on a daily basis.
And the way you would catch a straw purchaser is if I buy five guns and wait a few months and go buy five more guns. That's probably one way that I would pop up on a radar somewhere, I presume.
Oh yeah,
right?
If you're, in fact, I was just listening to a podcast on my way over here, and there was a guy that was trying
Yolitics, or what was this?
That was a Yolitics.
Oh, there's another one.
There's another one.
We'll get you a library to download.
Oh yeah. I listen to it on my days off all the time.
What did they say though in the podcast?
So they were talking about this one guy that came to the attention of the ATF because he was buying semi-automatic parts. And he'd go to the gun shows to buy the bottom part, the half of the AR-15. And so he would get that, and he'd buy like five. And then he'd come back and ask for 10 more. But it was the seller who actually called the ATF.
So because they don't have to.
They don't have to. Yeah, they don't have to. But they were concerned because he's like, well, why does this guy need 50, gun parts? Like, he's doing something with these. And so they caught him that way.
Is the ATFE having any luck stopping these guns from going north of the border or south of the border?
They are. I mean, they have had some pretty big cases. They had just one recently, a guy that got arrested. I think it was last week they announced an indictment with hundreds of weapons that were supposed to go into Mexico. Yeah. I mean, they are having, but it is difficult. And as you know, the ATF is one of the smallest agencies in the federal government, and there's not enough FBI agents, there's not enough ATF agents, there's not enough police. And just like everybody else, they are having trouble recruiting, and now with some of the edicts that have come down from the White House, it's unclear what's going to happen with some of these agents. So, you know, they're concerned. There's concern among federal agents if they even have enough people to do the job that they need to do to stop all of these weapons coming in and also being purchased illegally here in the U.S. that are being used for crimes here among our citizens.
Well, ultimately, though, too, if you're in Canada, you realize that, you know, there's not enough ATFE agents in the U.S. to stop, you know, what's coming across your border. And this is on you, and they're overwhelmed by it. Do you get a sense that they understand the scope of what they're dealing with? Because you've dealt with law enforcement here for a long time. For every gun that they pull out, for every kilo of cocaine that they catch, they know that there's exponentially more that they're missing.
And I think that that's why they have this lawsuit against the gun manufacturers
in
Mexico.
Yeah.
Because Mexico's saying you are allowing them to make so many weapons that it's impossible for us to stop the flow into our country and into the hands of really, really bad people that are killing citizens in Mexico. So it is be interesting to see what happens. And as you know, there's been all other lawsuits against gun manufacturers in the U.S., the Sandy Hook families that sued the gun manufacturer. So it'll be interesting to see if any of these actually, whatever.
It's
hard
to imagine with this really conservative Supreme Court. It's really hard to imagine, but that could. This has got to be rattling the gun makers right now, because this could be floodgates, you know, whether you open the floodgates or don't. And again, that case is set for the Supreme Court for March 4th. The interesting thing with that is that that was, you know, immediately swatted down in the first round in the courts. But just in January, it was revived by a court of appeals. And the interesting thing there was, you know, I mean, gun makers here in the U.S., the reason this hasn't been successful is because they have broad immunity. But that appeals court panel found unanimously that Mexico's lawsuit had possible legitimacy here, because they say it was designed to protect lawful firearms-related commerce.
Correct.
Yet Mexico, this is the interesting part of what Mexico is doing. Mexico accuses these companies of aiding and abetting illegal gun sales by facilitating the trafficking of arms. And so that's a very, you know, I know that you hate this word, Jason.
Oh, go ahead.
Nuance. That's a very nuanced way of going at this. And it appears, I mean, it's gotten through all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court now because of the way Mexico is pursuing this. And this is a $10 billion lawsuit. This isn't a small lawsuit. But I think that the gun manufacturers are seeing it even beyond that and going, oh, boy, that would be $10 billion. But then who else comes for us if this succeeds?
And it's interesting because in the lower courts, they tossed out some of the gun makers, but not one of the largest gun makers in the United States. So I think there's only two or three that are left now in the lawsuit. There were two, but I believe that there were initially 10.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Mark, our executive producer. There were eight initially, come here, Mark.
We don't have a mic on you, man.
Smith & Wesson, original sale dealer.
Mark
Smith is
only
an amazing investigative journalist, and he's here to keep us all honest.
Well, he's
today.
Making sure that I get my facts right too, because he did a lot of the research with me on this, and it was extremely helpful. But yeah, that's one of the interesting things, is that they did toss out some of the other gun manufacturers, but not Smith & Wesson.
Let me ask this, though. Doesn't that just, wouldn't that possibly put a chill, though, because they didn't just go for the gun manufacturers, they went for gun stores, distributors.
Ones, yes.
And even if, let's say, you were included in that original lawsuit, and that sort of got tossed out, but the lawsuit kind of continued on without you as a distributor, I wonder, does that start to put a chill on some of these gun stores where, you know, like you said, at that gun show, they start self-reporting, like, hey, we've got some issues with this person.
Yeah.
Does it make you start thinking, like, okay, I've got to watch this a little bit more?
And I wonder if it sets a precedent. You're absolutely right. But it was interesting, because when I went through the ATF class, they do talk about a lot of the people that that sell a lot of weapons here in Texas and in the DFW area. And they say, for the most part, they are very cooperative, gun stores, very cooperative with the ATF. They're very cooperative about opening up their files. And they do the surprise inspection. So if they see anything, they do flag them on it. But they said they're most of the sellers here in Texas are doing their due diligence. At least that's what the ATF was saying in my ATF class, that they do due diligence, and they are making sure that people, at least when you're going to the gun stores, now gun shows are a whole different story, but the gun stores, they say, are pretty good about self-reporting and also just sort of self-monitoring themselves.
Well, their livelihood is at stake also.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, their federal firearms license is at stake, so they'd have to do that. But you're talking about the
stakes
loophole
are high for
there.
Them.
Sure.
Yeah.
The loopholes are the gun shows, the person-to-person sellers, which is something that, you know, hasn't been regulated and likely will not be.
But you think about, you know, if the ATFE is correct, you know, just with Mexico, 200,000 firearms a year, that's a lot of firearms making it across. There's an industry there, you know, and it's a matter of, and I guess that's what the Mexican government is trying to do, is figure out how that industry is so efficient and so large scale and so successful.
And it could hinge on, I think the legal case, like you guys were alluding likely will hinge on a legal argument, a technicality maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what really could propel this. You talked about Mexico. We know the issues with the cartels. Each administration comes into the Mexican government, and they have trouble getting a handle on this. But I'm curious what the Canadian police told you about the guns going north. What would they like to see done? What do the Canadians want to see done? They're already spending money to harden their border, but what else do they want to see done in the U.S.?
I think they want to see the U.S. do more on our side of the border to stop those guns. Like they believe that all the onus is on them.
At the point of sale where?
No, like actually at the border, like, and you know, get more help with those that are, you know, trying to smuggle them, you know, from the U.S. into Mexico. Just like, President Trump is calling for Mexico to do more about bringing illegal immigrants and stopping the illegal immigration on that side of the border.
Stop the farther south.
You guys need to do is stop those weapons from coming in across our borders from the other direction. So, I think that's the argument that Canada was making is, why can't you guys do more to help us stop this, because they're your weapons that you're manufacturing in the U.S. that are coming across your borders affecting our citizens.
In the real world, you wonder how that happens. What does that look like?
I don't even know.
I even thought this with the Sheinbaum thing south of the border. You know, she says that, you know, she got President Trump to say, we'll try to help with keeping those guns from coming across. How do you?
Yeah, I mean, what does that look like?
Anybody who's been across the border knows that usually, you know, the real magnifying glass that you're going to go under is going to be when you get to the other country's customs.
Right.
You know, when you get to Mexican customs, you're going to drive right across that bridge. There's no one on the U.S. side who's really going to probably search you before you get to that Mexican side. How do you stop that from this country going out?
That's an interesting question.
Unless you really start cracking down.
Yeah, there has to be motivation. But even on the other side, you know, I've driven into Canada, I've driven into Mexico too. Mm-hmm. You push a button at the Mexican border and it lights up a light, or you put a quarter in or something like that. And you seriously, I mean, maybe it's been a year, maybe it's a few dollars now. But still, you drive right in.
Yeah.
And you come into the U.S. in any direction.
Yeah.
And they're stopping you. They want to know everything about where you've been, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, sure, a lot of this is probably on the United States with the gun issue here. But I am interested to see what Canada does to harden its border and to try to find some of this going in on their side, because the U.S. is clearly doing that on its side.
And they're doing more to invest more in detection at the airports and what have you as well. Canada is. And they're like, you guys need to do more about how you stop it before it ever takes off from the U.S. into our airports.
Well, the last question I have is, you report this stuff all the time, and you take these classes. You report on a lot of bad guys, a lot of police, a lot of drugs, a lot of guns. You ever get threats?
You know, it's so interesting. I've never actually gotten any kind of threats from anyone. The only time, and I don't say this to be, because it's a very serious topic, the only death threats I ever gotten were from Dallas Cowboy fans.
From who?
Dallas Cowboy fans.
Can we edit that out?
I broke a story involving
Cowboys fans are threatening you?
They can be an angry lot.
They've got plenty to be angry about.
Never mind the gun lobby and the cartels here. The death threats are coming.
I've never gotten cartel threats. I've never gotten, but I did a story on a cowboy. He got arrested. I did the story. It broke. And they accused me, you cost us the Super Bowl. And they were so mad.
I don't think that cost us the Super Bowl.
That's another episode. Yeah. And then the only other very interesting story that I did have involving the cartels, believe it or not, years ago when they were taking down the Zeta cartel and the Gulf cartels, there was a guy that was one of the top Zetas, the second in command, that was living in Balch Springs, believe it or not. That's where he was living. He was living
Balch
there.
Balch Springs, just to the east of Dallas.
Yes, and he had, in fact, I think there's a documentary out on Netflix right now about how they were tied to the horse racing and they were doing some illegal stuff involving all that. So I found out, I got the address, and I don't know why, we just thought it was a great idea to go down there and knock on the door and see if any of the family members would talk.
But so Rebecca's fearless, though.
I went down there with Diane Solis from the Dallas Morning News. She and I were there together, and we knocked on the door, and they called the police on us.
Really?
Yes.
Jeez. They thought they were protected?
They called the police on us and told us that we were trespassing. And so we got off the property, and we said, and they still, they wanted us off the street, and the police showed up, and they're like, yeah, you have every right to be here. And they're like, which house? And we showed it to them. They're like, oh yeah, you can do whatever you want. We don't care. But you know, I would venture to say that I'm probably one of the few journalists in this country that's ever had the cartel members call the police on them.
That's pretty good. That's pretty strong.
Good to know that they went the lawful route.
So I didn't
like
get the death threat, but they did call the cops on me.
Wow. I'll close with this, Harlow, because you know you've done phenomenal work. You always do phenomenal work. We love having you on the podcast here. So you did, put out this big story about, you know, this whole issue of guns, you know, just flowing into Canada. We already knew they're flowing into Mexico. Guns are such a polarizing issue in this country. And I'm just curious, have you gotten any response on this from people? Have you heard from anybody on this, or has it been surprising radio silence?
It's been surprising radio silence. I think there's just so much going on right now that I think it's sort of gotten lost in everything else that's happening with immigration and what have you. So it did not have the impact that I thought it was going to have initially with people getting outraged. Not that I was looking for that, but I was anticipating it just in case.
Yeah.
But I will say that I did get some calls from agents that saw the piece and thought it was very, very well done.
Because they know. They're in it.
Yeah, they're in
they live it every day.
They see it.
I was interested, though, that this piece came out. It aired right as Claudia Sheinbaum down in Mexico was saying, oh, by the way, I told President Trump we need him to, you know, keep those guns north of the border. And I do wonder when she said that if Canada was like, oh, gosh, Get President Trump on the phone. Include us in that,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Like, we want that, too.
Yeah, and it was so funny because we actually had been working on this story for a while, and it kept getting held, and it just so
because you always make sure that everything's
perfect. We're going to make sure we go through the lawyers, make sure we're double-checking, triple-checking, quadruple-checking all of our facts, and so it took a while to get it on the air, and then it aired, and our news director, Leslie McCardle, came up to me. She's like, see, it came out at a timely manner.
It turned out like it should.
Aren't you glad I took my time approving your script?
Right. Wow. So if people want to see the story, they can find it at WFAA.com. Search Rebecca Lopez there, and all your great work is there, too. Rebecca, thank you so much. Fascinating work, as always. And I thought it was a big deal. No radio silence from the politics.
Yeah.
No, we immediately thought that this is something that we should explore.
Especially with what's happening politically.
And I think you'll see in March, you'll see national media on this issue.
We may have to loop back and have another conversation about this.
It'll be very interesting. I'm very curious to see what the Supreme Court's going to do.
Yeah, don't sleep on that Supreme Court case. Right. That should be interesting.
Harlow, thank you so much. Rebecca Lopez from WFAA. We appreciate it. And a quick shout out, too, to Manhattan Project Beer Company, the west side of downtown Dallas. Fantastic beer, as always.
Yeah.
They're always kind enough to have us here. Great food, too. So we're going to stick around after the podcast. But you have to take off in a minute to go break another story.
Maybe. I might have to have another beer with y'all. No, I do have a big story working.
All right. We may have you on for that, too, depending on what it is. And hey, Cowboys fans out there, take a breath.
Yeah.
Just take it easy.
Wow.
Yeah,
Rebecca's not the enemy. She's just the messenger.
Yeah, we're not getting to the Super Bowl anytime soon, so let's just, live with it.
we're going to have death threats on Yolitics. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.
Click subscribe and get Yolitics every week. Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.